right, folks, we are back. We dive into the action line with Attorney John Day. Good morning. How are you?
Fantastic.
Thanks for seeing you. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Glad to be here.
Any big special plans? We're just talking about Easter. Any big Easter plans for you?
I hate to say this out loud, but other than going to church, I'm going to be at the office this weekend.
Okay.
I am behind. So I've already told my wife and my daughter I've got to spend the weekend at the office.
All right. Well, as long as you're getting to church on Sunday, that works. That'll take care of it. I wanted to start off by mentioning the last time we chatted, you were doing the big St. Patrick's Day free ride giveaway. You were helping people get home safely on St. Patrick's Day. And that was when I was kind of new to WGNS. One of my first days when you were in here with Bart. And when I told a lot of people about that. And I wanted to thank you on behalf of them as well as myself. That was a really great thing to help keep people safe on St. Patrick's Day. So thank you, thank you, thank you. I know about four or five friends of mine who took advantage, and they texted me the next day and said, "Hey, that was awesome. The promo code worked. That was really cool." So,
well, thank you. It's a really important project for us. It's the third time we've done it here in town. The other two times were on New Year's Eve, but we were thrilled to do it, and it was a big success.
Awesome. So safety. I mentioned before you walked in here, safety is a big, important factor of life in any way, shape, or form. And you guys are working on something to help keep people safe, maybe out on the roadways this spring and summer with the free helmet giveaway. Talk about that.
We are. Last year, we started this helmet giveaway program in Murfreesboro, and we gave away 1,060 helmets to children in the community. And we found that people like it and appreciate it, so we started again. And this year, we've set aside 2,000 helmets.
Wow.
To give away. So we started last weekend, 10 days ago, I guess it was, with a program with the Murfreesboro Fire Department, where we worked with them and had a giveaway in the parking lot outside our office. And then we're going to be at Cannonsburg Village in 10 days at Pioneer Days, and we'll be out there for 6 hours. And we've set aside 500 helmets to give away that day.
So how do you transport 500 helmets? Is it like a big box truck full of helmets? Or
we rent a truck.
We
rent a truck and we bring it over. We have a tent we put up. We've got tables. And we're going to have a bunch of people there, myself included, who will be handing out helmets and trying to help keep kids safe. The fact is that there is a 50% reduction in head injuries and a 30% reduction in facial injuries if people are wearing a helmet and they happen to crash in either a bike or a scooter wreck. And these things are going to happen. So our thought is, let's make it easy for parents to supply their kids with helmets, and let's get the kids started early wearing helmets so they think it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Because the older they get, the less likely they are to use helmets unless they are already in the mindset and the habit to do it. Mm. I had prepared to say, but I can't say this to you, but I'll say it anyway as if Bart was here, that Bart would remember when cars didn't have seat belts. I remember it too. And so when I was a child in my early teen years, there were no seat belts in the cars we had in our household. We had older cars. So I never got into the habit of wearing seat belts like many, many kids do today. My kids wouldn't think of getting in a car and going two blocks without putting on a seat belt. It is automatic. So let's try to do the same thing with bicycle helmets and scooter helmets. Let's get young people trained very early on. Just make it natural. I'm getting on this device with wheels and going to be going on blacktop or concrete. Let's put something on my head.
I like it. I love it. You mentioned the location. How do people get these helmets? Do they just show up and
just show up at the Pioneer Days? We were there last year as well. It's a great event, by the way. And I was there. They have a little square dance event in the morning. I don't know if they're going to have it this year or not, but they were there last year at 10 o'clock, and my daughter and I were out there square dancing, which I'm sure brought amusement to lots of other people because I'm really, really bad at it. But in any event, it's there at Cannonsburg Village, and we'll just have a tent. There'll be lots of other people there with giveaways and information, and we'll be there.
All righty, folks. We'd like to remind you the phone lines are open. We're also taking text messages for all you youngsters out there. It seems to be 50-50. People will text, people will call, but you can do either or. 615-893-1450. If you have any questions along the way for Action Line this morning with Attorney John Day, give us a call. We would love to hear from you. All right, so we mentioned the free helmet giveaway. Now, let's paint a picture here. Kids are on their bikes, they're driving around, or people in cars for that matter. Spring and summer can present some difficulties because of all the rain. So what does that look like when you're out riding, whether it be a car, a bike, a bicycle, motorcycle, when you're out on that wet pavement, what do people need to know?
Well, today's a classic example, right? We've got a Friday. It's a heavy travel day for people going back home to see their parents during the Easter holiday. We have a few less work-related people on the road, and schools are closed. But there's still a lot of people on the road, and here it is raining. I mean, we know, common sense tells us, that there's more hazards associated with rain on the highway. But in fact, the risk of a fatal wreck is 127% higher.
Wow.
when there's light rain on the roads. And if it's a heavy rain or snow, the increase is almost 250%.
Wow.
So once again, I don't want to overly alarm people. The risk of a wreck is still relatively small per 100 miles traveled, but the idea is you only need one and your life can change pretty dramatically. So we encourage people to do a couple of things when they're driving in bad weather. Number one, give yourself some time to get where you're going. I mean, we all plan, if we're going to work, that it's going to take 43 minutes or 17 minutes or whatever the heck it is. But that assumes that the day is going to be normal. The day is not normal when it's raining. Mm-hmm. There's more an increased likelihood that there's going to be slower traffic, that some people out there are going to do dumb things and create hazards for us. And we just need to plan more time so we don't get stressed out in the car and start to do unreasonable things. The second thing is, it's really important to keep your car maintained, to keep the brakes maintained, to keep the tires maintained so you've got good tread, to have your lights working, your taillights, so that people can see you when you slow down, your headlights so you have a good view and so people can see you coming from the opposite direction. I mean, these things are really, really important all the time, but they're especially important when there's bad weather. Excuse me. I'm a cruise control guy. In normal traffic, in other words, if I'm on the interstate going someplace, I tend to put the cruise control on and take my foot off the gas. Mm-hmm. Not a good idea when it's raining because of pounding water on the roads. You may not be paying quite as close attention. You hit that pounding water at a higher speed than you want to. It can create difficulties for you, so we would recommend that people not use cruise control in bad weather. Once again, it's essential to wear seat belts. I can't tell you how important it is in terms of saving your life to wear a seat belt when you're operating a car. It just makes a material difference in safety. It's part of the car is designed to help protect you when you're wearing a seat belt. Airbags alone are not enough. You can't count on them. This car is designed so that the airbags and the seat belt work together. So those are some of the ideas that we would ask people to think about when they're on the road.
Excellent. And as if you're a parent out there, you mentioned teaching the kids young, mentioned with the helmet as well as the seatbelt, to kind of burn that into their brain, wear a seatbelt, always wear a helmet. How early can you start telling your kids this? I mean, pretty early, right?
Well, I remember several years ago when my daughter, who's now 11, was 4, and I got in the car and started to back out the driveway, and she said, "Daddy, put your seatbelt on." So I'd say at least 4.
That's got to make you feel good when she's 4 years old telling you that.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, I think, and I quite frankly, I think most people do that. If you're not conscious of your personal safety before you have children, you become much more conscious of it after you have children. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we know the best way for kids to learn is for their parents to teach them.
Now, often when there is an accident, whether it's a big accident, small accident, fender bender, a lot of finger pointing going on at the accident site. So what do people need to know from a legal standpoint as far as, let's say they get into a fender bender and they always say, let the insurance handle it. Don't ever say that was my fault in the accident. They often say, let the insurance handle it. What would you say from that standpoint to, maybe help people out in that spot? Because it can be stressful when you're in the moment.
Well, it is, and I think that the main thing for people to remember, and let me back up just a minute. it is, I think, quite easy to say, just let the insurance handle it. But in a real world situation, people are going to be asked questions by the police, by the other driver, maybe by a witness, and they're going to be inclined, I would hope, to tell the truth. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage people to tell the truth. It tends to serve you pretty well. Now, there are going to be some people who disagree with that, saying, well, geez, don't admit that you made a mistake. But I must tell you, there's a lot of things more important in life than avoiding a claim against you, mm-hmm. something that your insurance is going to happen. And I happen to think that truth-telling is one of those things. So I would encourage people to tell the truth. I would also encourage people to document what they see. For instance, if there is something about the position of the cars that is unusual or something, it's not unwise, assuming that everybody's medical needs have been attended to take photographs or something at the scene. Because many times, especially on busy streets, you are going to move your car, or the police are going to be moving the cars relatively quickly to try to keep the flow of traffic. It's handy down the road to have those car locations documented in a photograph. It's also important for people to exchange information about names, contact information, and particularly get the names of witnesses who may have to leave before the police get there. Mm-hmm. Or even if you know the police are coming, the police don't necessarily get everybody's name. People don't want to stick around that long, or the police thinks, well, this is straightforward. I don't need to document fully who was present. By the way, I'm not criticizing the police for not getting that information. 99 times of 100, they're right. But sometimes things come up, and it's helpful to have the names of anybody who saw it. So it's important to get that information and not just say it was a guy in a blue car or it was a lady in a yellow SUV. Name, address, phone number is really, really important down the road.
What about like a license plate number? If you can get a license plate number, is that something you want to get as well?
License plate is handy, of course. It may be somebody else's car. It may be a rental car. Mm-hmm. You know, that gives you more information than nothing. But ideally, you would like to get the person's name and contact information.
We did get a text message in here from one of the listeners. I'm going to have to paraphrase it a little bit. But basically what they're asking is, if you get into an accident, let's say you're in the middle of the roadway, you get a fender bender, you get rear-ended, are you supposed to not move your car even if it's in traffic, or are you supposed to get to safety? So let's say you're in the middle of the road, someone bumps you. Often people will say don't move, you know, till the cops get there so they can see what happened. But if you're in the middle of the roadway, do you need to get off the roadway, or is that going to affect the situation because you move the cars?
I think it depends on the severity of the impact. If it's a relatively minor impact, then I think it makes sense to stop the car, get out of the car, determine what's going on, and then if it's relatively minor, to move off the roadway.
Okay.
Now, mainly for a safety reason, because if you're out in the roadway blocking traffic or a lane of traffic, you are at increased risk for getting hit again, mm-hmm. or for causing a backup traffic and having the person 15 cars back get hit from the rear. If it's a more serious wreck, you know, something where there's very, very visible property damage, or certainly if somebody's hurt, then it makes sense to stay there and let the police make the decision whether the cars would be moved. That's what I recommend.
And another listener here wondering, if you we were mentioning, we'll have to rewind here for a second, mentioning when you're giving the police report, when you're talking about what happened, is there any legal repercussion if you were to say, well, I was in this lane and they hit me when maybe you weren't? If they find out that you were lying and the police reporter lying to try to maybe get yourself out of trouble, is there a legal repercussion there?
Oh, probably not. I mean, technically, you know, you're not supposed to lie to the police, and I wouldn't recommend that anybody do so. If they make an innocent mistake, though, they should correct it. Mm-hmm. Once again, it's important to tell the truth, and it's important to give the police accurate information. I mean, it's just one of our duties as citizens, right?
Yes.
So that's what we should do. And anybody can make a mistake giving information, but you should promptly correct it if you do.
I think that we mentioned it can be a pretty stressful situation if you get into an accident. A lot of times people get tunnel vision. They say, oh, no, I made this big mistake or whatever. But accidents happen. I mean, people get into fender benders all the time, so it's not completely out of the ordinary. Like you said, just be truthful. It happens. I think if you talk to most people have been in an accident some way, shape, or form. So even if it is your fault, it's you said it's not beneficial to try to fib or stretch the truth because it happens. It's just part of life.
Well, you know, I tell clients who have been hurt because somebody else made a mistake this, and I believe it, and pardon my language, I don't think people go to hell for making a simple mistake. Mm-hmm. I think anybody can make a mistake when they're driving a car. And a lot of times those mistakes are not going to cause anybody any harm. They're just going to cause a close call. And sometimes they're just going to cause damage to a car and not to a person. And sometimes they're going to hurt a person just a little bit, not a whole lot. Still all mistakes, right? Tell the truth about it and move on. Say what happened, but move on. Because this is just the golden rule, and here we are talking about this on Good Friday. But we should act the way we would like others to act in that situation. And I would think most of us would say, you should tell the truth, and I would expect others to tell the truth. So let's just do that. I think that would be a good idea.
I love it, and a good message, again, for Good Friday and Easter weekend. We're going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, Attorney John Day is with us for the second half of the hour, 615-893-1450. I'll say it again, 615-893-1450, if you want to call or text any questions you might have. When we come back, we're going to talk about some new Tennessee car accident facts that you should know. We're going to try to keep you informed on what's going on the roadways. And if an accident happens, like we said, they do happen, what you need to do, we're going to make sure you are prepared. All that when we come back.
We have now gotten a food truck. Hi, this is Peter Demas with Demas's Restaurants. Our food truck has various items from the Demas's menu, from our Peter D's catering menu, from our new concept PDK, and we can combine it in any form or fashion. The food truck is available for rent, and it also can show up at any different events or outings, but it's set up here to be able to serve the people here anytime you want without having to go inside the restaurant. Demas's Restaurant at 1115 Northwest Broad Street in Murfreesboro.
If you are a guitar player, I hope you realize that Music World and Drummers Den is a dealer for Martin, Taylor, Gretsch, Alvarez guitars. We do repairs and setups. We also carry Yamaha keyboards. We're a full-rounded music store with everything the local musician will need. I am Dan Mitchell. I do the repairs and setups. We invite you to come over to Music World and Drummers Den for the best that we have to offer in Murfreesboro. We're at 2762 South Church Street, right across from the golf course.
This is Kim Dunaway from Sunshine Nutrition Center. You hear me on Monday mornings at 7:20 talking about how to lead a healthier lifestyle. We carry supplements, personal care, and grocery items at both our Murfreesboro and Smyrna locations, family owned and operated since 1989.
News Radio WGNS Primetime Sports brings you prep baseball and softball coverage.
This one is going back, and it's going over the fence.
There's a drive. Pretty well hit. This ball, no doubt about it, it's out of here.
Brian Barrett and John Dinkins cover the preps.
Bazing at First National Bank of Murfreesboro gives a new meaning to pushing the bar on customer service.
First National Bank of Murfreesboro's Bazing offers discounts on medicine and doctors.
I saved on my eye doctor's exam and the glasses, too.
Look how much I saved at the drugstore.
Hearing services as well.
First National Bank of Murfreesboro, 2230 Mercury Boulevard. This is Freedom Wiggin from First National Bank of Murfreesboro, member FDIC.
Alrighty, we are back for the second half of the Action Line here with Attorney John Day. Now, if you have any questions, if you want to text or call, 615-893-1450. And the conversation we're having this morning is staying safe, whether that be on a bicycle, whether that be in a car, whether that be when you're traveling for Easter weekend, Good Friday, or just in general. Not to mention, folks, when it rains out there, those roads can get slick. So we tackled that first topic and kind of gave you guys a couple ways to stay safe, a couple things to keep in the back of your head when you're driving on the rain or in heavy traffic. We're going to chat more particularly on car accident facts this time around. What do we need to know as far as, you know, if somebody gets into an accident, like we were talking briefly about a minute ago, what are some things they need to know to keep in the back of their head?
Well, we talked about telling the truth about what happened when you're asked by the police officer or the other person involved. I think another thing is to try to render aid and to get help for anybody who has been injured in the wreck. In other words, you know, we all appreciate the fact that we've got a car that works, and we hate to see our car damaged because we know it's going to hurt the value of the car and it's going to be an inconvenience. But people come first, and if people need help, it's important to render aid and to call for medical help. So we all know how to do that. We call 911 and get help. You have to make a decision if the person is in the other vehicle or your own vehicle is badly injured in the about whether or not you move them. And I think most people would tell you that you should not move somebody who appears to be badly injured unless you believe there is some sort of risk for a fire. Mm-hmm. That moving them could cause their medical injuries to worsen. And I think that's just a judgment call, quite frankly, that you have to make at the time. But I personally would not attempt to move anybody out of the car unless I thought there was some reason to believe the car might catch on fire.
Alrighty, and this is something that I had in my notes I've been waiting to unleash. I had to wait till the second half of the conversation. We were talking about seatbelts a minute ago.
Right.
What percentage of drivers, this is amazing to me, what percentage of drivers are now adapting the seatbelt method and actually clicking, wearing that seatbelt? How many people are doing that?
90%.
That's incredible. According to them,
yes, it really is. When you think, and once again, I mentioned this before, 50 years ago, they were just starting to put seatbelts in cars. And we have gone to Tennessee where it's about 90% of people are using them. So it's working. It's saving nationwide 15,000 lives a year. Think about that. 15,000 people every single year are not killed because they're wearing a seatbelt. And it's true. Seatbelts can cause some injuries. You're going to see some chest bruising on some people, maybe some shoulder bruising. Those things happen, but you can recover from those things in 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, 5 days. You have difficulty recovering when your head goes through a windshield. It's going to do some damage, even to a hard-headed person like me.
Often these accidents, there is some drinking involved. A lot of times you'll see one of the drivers or both of the drivers and some facts are impaired. What's being done to maybe try to prevent that a little bit?
Well, of course, we're seeing several things out there. We're seeing stepped up enforcement during holidays. So the police know when people tend to drink and drive, and they are doing what they should be doing by having more and more people on the roadway, officers on the roadway looking for people who are exhibiting signs of drunk driving. And you even see some roadblocks from time to time. Well, they stop every single car and check registration and try to determine if you're drinking. But there's some exciting new technology out there that Volvo is bringing to the market where they're going to have sensors in the car that begin to identify erratic driving, and then the car will notify their service, their many people have OnStar service in their cars. If they've got a newer GM vehicle, Volvo has a similar service where the service will call you and try to get you to try alert you to the problem. And if you don't start to correct your driving, it'll slowly shut your car down.
Wow.
And trying to protect you from yourself and protect other people from you. So think of what this could do, not only for people who are drinking and driving, but people who are sleepy while they're driving, people who have some sort of medical issue, maybe they're have diabetes and they're undergoing some sort of problem that's connected with that. We see those cases from time to time. If the car could be, quotation marks, smart, close quotation marks, enough to identify those types of behaviors that are linked to some sort of medical condition or consuming alcohol or using drugs and help slow your car down. What a wonderful, wonderful thing. Think how many lives would be saved. So we're really excited about that technology.
Absolutely. If you could, this is something that I was thinking about last night to bring up. Walk us through the process and, you know, how much cost it involved, what kind of legal repercussions are involved for someone that gets a DUI these days. I mean, it's not a slap on the wrist. That's a really, really big problem, and you get in a lot of trouble for even blowing just over the limit.
Well, yeah, and let me comment on that phrase and not be critical. Just over the limit is still over the limit.
Yes.
It's 0.08, and 0.09 is greater than 0.08. In fact, it's 12.5% greater, right? So you're 12.5% over the legal limit if you are at 0.09. And if you are found to have done that, you will go to jail. You will go to jail, and you'll spend some time there until somebody gets you out.
And that's automatic.
That's automatic. They're not going to let you go. They're not going to take you home. That used to happen 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. The police officers would stop you in, you know, how far are you away from home? 2 miles. Well, they'll give you a little, you know, be careful out there. That doesn't happen anymore, and quite frankly, it shouldn't. That law needs to be enforced. So what you will go directly to jail, and you will go through the booking process, and you will be put into a jail cell, and then you will get out, and then you will be in the legal system where you face a fine, you face loss of your driver's license, and that has implications for your work. You know, if you're a person who drives for a living, what do you do if you don't have a driver's license? What do you do if maybe you can get a permit to drive during work hours? But there are some, some employers out there who don't want people who drink and drive in their vehicles. It can affect your employment opportunities. And then you may find yourself in jail for a couple days on the first offense because you violated the law. Then another implication is your cost of your insurance. The law in Tennessee requires that every person or every vehicle have liability insurance on it. Liability insurance is the insurance that protects you in the event you cause a crash and hurt somebody or hurt property. That cost of insurance can go up by 5, 6, 7, 8 times. I know of people who are paying $3,600 a year for a $25,000 insurance policy.
Wow.
So that's a lot of money. I mean, I don't care how much money you make. For the vast majority of us, the idea of paying $10 a day to drive your car, whether you drive it or not, $10 a day is a lot of money. And that will eventually go away if you go several years without having any more incidents. That will disappear, but you will spend thousands and thousands of dollars in the meantime for just the minimum amount of insurance. So the implications of driving while intoxicated is a really, they're big. They can be life-altering for a long time. And that's assuming you don't hurt somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you hurt somebody, it gets worse.
Yeah, and there's multiple avenues to this. It's not just a slap on the wrist or just a fine or just it's all of it. Like I said, you might take somebody's life, which is something that'll be with you for the rest of your life. And then, of course, if you have more than one mix-up, you could actually lose your license for good. They could just say you're never going to drive again. I've heard of that before.
Oh, you can go to jail for a very, very long time. Yes, I mean, you can be charged with vehicular homicide and end up in prison. I mean, horrible things can happen. And quite frankly, they should, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, you're playing Russian roulette, basically, when you get behind the wheel when you're intoxicated. And you don't intend to hurt anybody. You just engage in very, very, very reckless conduct. If somebody went out here to the football stadium with the stands full and had a loaded rifle and were blindfolded, they spun around a few times and then shot out at a 90-degree angle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they might not hit anybody. They might hit the open end, might go towards the open end of the stadium, but it might go right into the 50-yard line too, right? Mm-hmm. The seats in the 50-yard line, you kill somebody. That's just playing a rough form of Russian roulette with people's lives. So especially in cities like Murfreesboro, you have an option. Even if you make a mistake, you can use one of the ride-sharing services to get home. Mm-hmm. It's a little harder in Bell Buckle. I understand that, right? It's harder in the smaller communities. But when you are in a city, you have an opportunity to take advantage of those services, and you should.
Absolutely, and there's always friends and family on the outskirts if you don't have an Uber or a Lyft to say, you know, hey, I'll give you $10 to pick me up tonight. Or there's always an avenue, but if there's not, it's probably better to maybe make new plans or only have one beer instead of having a few and putting yourself over the limit.
Well, the designated driver thing, it seems to work for me. And, you know, people can take turns if people are worried about going over the limit. I will say this, and I, you know, without trying to sound like a hypocrite, because I've certainly had maybe a drink or two extra over the course of my 62 and a half years. There's a whole lot of good things that can happen when you maintain your wits about you. Or at least there's a whole lot of bad things that can be avoided.
Absolutely.
If you don't drink too much. And for the last many years, I've attempted to be a little bit more prudent in such things. And you know what? I'm still having fun. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage people to remember their responsibility to themselves, their family, and everybody else out there, not to get behind the wheel while they're drinking.
We did get a text message from a listener. They're asking, and I can see where they're coming from on this. I've seen them, breathalyzers, the little breathalyzers. They're kind of popping up everywhere, so you don't have to spend a lot of money to have one of those. They're saying, is that a good way to gauge whether I can drive or not? I'm going to go ahead and say no, because if you're in question, I don't know if I'd trust a little breathalyzer you pay $10 or $20 for at the store. I think if you're in question, maybe you just don't drive.
Yeah, I have the exact same opinion on those things you do. I don't know who's doing quality control on those. Mm-hmm. I don't know where in China the manufacturer is. I don't know if they'll ever be responsible if they give you a bad reading.
They're not going to bail you out if you call the company. Hey, use your breathalyzer. You know? So nope. Absolutely, if it's a question, just say no.
Yeah, I think it's a gag gift. I don't really think it's something you can rely on.
All right. One of the other things we were talking about this morning I wanted to touch on, we got about 15 minutes left, is cell phone use. That's kind of the other big factor in the accidents in cars. People on their cell phones, and that I think is more widespread than the drinking and driving. A lot of people don't drink at all, and a lot of people don't drink and drive ever. But almost everybody has a cell phone, 2-year-olds and 82-year-olds. Everyone's on their cell phones, it seems like, these days. So what's being done to keep an eye on that, and what would you say to the people out there who maybe check a text message or make a call while they're behind the wheel?
Well, let me step back in time for a minute. Cell phones used to be the big concern, and they're still a concern. But I think, quite frankly, that cell phones are less of a concern than texting while driving. Mm-hmm. And the reason is that when you text while drive, statistics tell us that you divert your eyes from the road an average of 5 seconds. If you're going 60 miles an hour, you're traveling 88 feet per second, which means if you divert your eyes from the road for 5 seconds at 60 miles an hour to send or receive a text, you have traveled 440 feet, which is about 1.5 football fields, without having your eyes on the road. Think about it. So I think texting while driving is the thing that all of us need to avoid. And my wife has it on her phone where you send her a text and the car is moving, a message automatically pops up, I'm driving, I'll get back with you later. Mm. I don't have that on my phone. I just turn my phone over and put it in the car and let it go. And try to avoid it that way. So I would encourage people, just stay away from the dang texting and driving. It's very, very dangerous and kills lots and lots of people. Now, the Tennessee Highway Patrol's got a pretty ingenious idea that they're using to try to identify people who text and drive, because it is illegal. They're riding with 18-wheelers, and going down the road and then looking over to see if people are driving down the road and texting.
Is that because they're so much higher on the
18-wheeler? Yeah, they're six people higher. They can see. It's not something you could hide by holding your phone in your lap.
Right.
And they can identify people and give them tickets for. And once again, it's a pretty smart idea, I think. I don't think it's sneaky or dishonest or anything like that. They're trying to identify people that create a hazard. Driving over here this morning, I saw countless people texting and driving. Mm-hmm. We're all addicted to the phone. I spend too much time on my phone, not while I'm driving, but otherwise, right? And people just need to stay away from it. There is for other options for using cell phones while driving, where I personally think it can be relatively safe, and that is by using hands-free system. I have my phone hooked up through my car. I have a microphone, of course, like many people do, where some people wear a little headset. And I think you can maintain a lookout ahead and still talk to people while you're driving. It gets a little trickier when you're trying to dial a phone number. Mm-hmm. Maybe if you're lucky, you're equipped with a system where you can simply speak into your phone and it will dial a number for you. But I think hands-free talking on the phone is a relatively safe way to do it, as long as you're not trying to dial a number while you're driving.
And that's perfect timing, because we just get a text message there asking if the hands-free phones, if that's okay to use. If a police officer sees you, let's say you're in the car by yourself and they see your mouth moving but you're not talking to anybody, they probably assume you're on the hands-free. But that's not illegal, or could you get?
No, it's not. That? It's not illegal to do that.
Okay.
And they may think you're singing along with the radio,
right,
too. By
that'd
the
be
way,
good excuse.
And there's a good number of people who talk to themselves driving down the road. But no, the idea is, are you paying attention ahead, and are you maintaining a lookout for problems down the road? And I think, and maybe this is my bias because I'm admitting right now I do this, I spend time on the phone when I'm driving. I use hands-free, and I like to think that I know what I'm doing, and I like to think that other people are just as capable as I am. But you've still got to pay attention, but the question is, can you do those two things at one time? I think many people can. I think holding the phone in one hand and driving with the other, it increases the likelihood of a problem.
What are some other ways that drivers, maybe that you wouldn't think of, but I'm sure you see and hear about this more than most people, that you can't do while you drive? There's just a number of things, whether you're talking on your phone. I've heard the old tale, you're not legally supposed to eat while you're driving. I don't know if that one's true. Someone told me that when I was a kid. I think they were just trying to keep me from multitasking behind the wheel. But what other ticketable offenses are there that people behind the wheels might be doing that maybe they're not aware of?
Well, there's not many things you can directly get a ticket for. It's not illegal to have a cheeseburger or a donut while you're driving down the road. Where you can get a ticket is for failure to maintain a proper lookout ahead, or failure to maintain a safe distance ahead. Because those are things that can occur as a result of being distracted by eating or whatever you're doing. So, yeah, you can eat a cheeseburger, but just make sure you're maintaining a careful lookout ahead. And I certainly wouldn't recommend that any teenager do that. You've got to have some miles under you before you start doing that. But let me share this story with you to indicate the danger. I represented a family 2 years ago. The man was burned to death in a car, rear-ended by a tractor-trailer rig, and the driver of the tractor-trailer admitted that he had leaned over to grab a drink that he had just purchased from a local convenience store, and when he looked up, he saw traffic stopped ahead, and he ran into a car, caused a tragic fire, and a man burned to death. That's a professional truck driver. So anything that you are doing other than driving down the road and maintaining a lookout ahead increases the risk that you won't be paying attention when you need to. So I would be very, very cautious about doing anything other than driving while driving. Okay, that's just, you're taking an increased risk if you do it. Now, do I believe that if you've got a Coca-Cola in one hand and have an occasional drink when you're driving down the road, that that's negligent? No, I don't. But you got to maintain a lookout ahead.
We got a text message in again. I want to say the emphasis is on distracted driving, not one way, shape, or form. Just if you're distracted while you're driving, that is what they're trying to prevent. So that can really cover anything.
Well, yeah, sure. It can. In the old days, I remember cases in the 80s where people would be putting a cassette player, cassette tape into the car, or a CD into the car, or a CD drops to the ground. And they go to pick it up, and they're distracted. So it's the distraction, not so much the activity. It's being distracted from your job, and your job when you're driving a car is to operate that car so as you don't hurt anybody else or yourself.
We got a text message, and this is a good one. This is one that could definitely be good for some people out there. Says that their parents are getting a little bit older, and maybe they're getting to the age where they don't feel comfortable with their mom and dad driving. And that could be a number of different things: health, their sight, just overall, they're getting older, maybe they're not as aware. What can somebody do if maybe their mom or dad or aunt or uncle, grandma and grandpa, they're thinking, I don't feel great about them driving, but they're still able to, I mean, they still have a driver's license, they're legally allowed to drive, but where could they maybe step in? Is there anything they can do other than just say, just have a heart-to-heart?
It depends on the relationship that they have with their parents and whether their parents are open to having an honest and direct communication about their driving skills. They may not be. You know, it's very, very hard to give up the independence of driving.
Mm-hmm.
Another option is to go to the parents' doctor and have a conversation with them and let the doctor explore it with them. Now, some doctors get a little nervous about that because of privacy laws and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think most doctors who are primary care doctors would like to know that information, particularly if that child is otherwise involved in that parent's medical care.
Mm-hmm.
And just a little sit-down meeting with the doctor or the nurse practitioner, whoever it happens to be, and say, listen, I've noticed this. Can you help us work through this? And I think that would be helpful.
And you mentioned that the driving is one of the first freedoms that you get as an adult when you're 16, not even a full-grown adult yet, you get to drive. And that's one of the first things then into adulthood that really is highlighted in your life. So losing that 60 years later, 70 years later, can be hard. What about if, you know, I know when you do your driving test and you have to update your license, that they'll make you do a test for your eyesight and things like that. But if somebody were to say to a doctor, hey, I don't think mom should be driving, or maybe, you know, you should look into it. Can they give them an eye test at the doctor and say, you know, kind of do that instead of doing it every 4 or 5 years when your license expires? Can they do that, set something up to make sure? Because I think that's probably a big one, is the sight.
Yeah, that's part of it. And that and the reaction time, right? I mean, those are things you worry about. And also the ability to be attentive to detail, because part of the aging process is that your reaction times are a little bit slower, or maybe you may not pay as close attention to what's going on. You may drift off, and I don't mean have a seizure or a stroke. I'm just talking about maybe not be as attentive as you would have been 20 years earlier. I think the doctor, when confronted with the facts, will know what to do and will probably have more credibility than many family members. Once again, it's the whole, the relationship between the child and the parent will influence what to do next.
Mm-hmm.
I think if the child is actively involved in the care and the parent trusts and respects that child's opinion on such things, they're more likely to not need the help of a doctor. But you may want to reach out to the doctor in those other cases and just say, can you examine for this and ask some questions about it and start to put the process in place where the doctor can provide some assistance?
Are there any kind of medications out there that people might be on that, I mean, obviously there are, that could affect your driving, but that someone might not realize? Maybe you're taking something for blood thinner or something for your heart, and you know, it might make you drowsy or affect you in a certain way. Is that something people need to watch out for their folks driving?
Benadryl, Sudafed, all those type of medications. And I know this because my doctor brought it to my attention the other day about how taking the allergy type drugs, and that's what I was taking it for, can affect your reaction time and your attentiveness and your drowsiness. And he even said to me that there's some studies that indicate that it can have as much of effect as having several drinks of alcohol if you're taking these drugs and it's, they're in your system. So I think that's a drug that that a lot of people take, particularly in Middle Tennessee, particularly at this time of year, that can impact driving. Doesn't mean it's inappropriate to drive. It means you need to be aware of it. I would also encourage people to pay attention to the patient information sheet that they get with their prescription medications. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's frequently listed on there, if it is a problem, about whether the drug causes drowsiness or can delay reaction time. That or the side of a box of an over-the-counter will give that information, and it makes sense to listen to it.
Awesome. A lot of good information here this morning. We're with Attorney John Day. This is the Action Line, News Radio WGNS, as we dissect and have these good conversations with different partners and community pillars. So I appreciate all this information. It seems like you're really, really looking out for people and trying to keep people safe, which is amazing.
Well, it's important. You know, I've seen a lot of heartache and tragedy caused to people who have been victims of automobile wrecks and truck wrecks and lots of other things. And I also know that the people who make the mistake and cause those wrecks go through their own special type of hell, right? Can you imagine what it would feel like to hurt somebody else? Even if you didn't intend to do it, it would cause a lot of sleepless nights and concern. So let's all do what we can to prevent people from getting hurt. I think that's a wonderful thing to think about at the Easter season.
All right. Well, any final thoughts? We got about 2 minutes. Any final thoughts this morning?
The last thing I would like to share is the way we started out, and that is our law firm is going to be giving away up to 500 bicycle helmets, and we'll get more if we have to. We've got them sitting in storage, but we'll have 500 bicycle helmets and scooter helmets available for young people at Pioneer Days next weekend, 8 days from now on Saturday. We'll be there from 10 till 4 over in Cannonsburg Village, and giving people a helmet. We'll try to fit it appropriately for each child. There'll be several helmets there for adults, but quite frankly, most of them are children's sizes, and we ran out of the extra small ones last year, so we brought more of those. We will be bringing more of those with us to the big Pioneer Day celebration next week. We hope you're able to come out and join us. It's a great community event.
Are these helmets just for the kiddos, or is this if you're a teenager or a young adult?
Yeah, we've got three different sizes available, and depending on the size of your head as a teenager or a young adult, we'll have some. And we've got some that fit adults that don't have big heads. I got a big, fat head.
Oh, you're talking to the guy with the biggest head.
Well,
in the world.
No, I think I got a fatter head than you do. But none of those helmets will fit my fat head, but there were adults last year who had smaller, more normal heads. And we were able to accommodate some of them. But quite frankly, we focus primarily on kids.
Fantastic. If you would throw quickly out your contact information if anybody else needs to reach out to you for any legal reasons.
Well, this is John Day once again. I've got an office here in Murfreesboro, and you can read all about us on our website, johndaylegal.com.
All righty, sir. Always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Happy Easter to you.
Yes, happy Easter to you.